It's time to get way down low, below top secret.
Wait a minute.
Current events,
sports,
art, entertainment,
food,
topics, automotive topics, relationships. It's all here. Now, from belowtopsecret.com, this is the BTS Mix.
I'm Spencer Tracy, and my good buddy Doc Hancock from New York City is with me. Hey, Doc, how are you doing?
I'm very good, Spencer. Welcome, one and all. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. Of course, the weather's been beautiful here in West Texas, mid-80s, and just beautiful outside.
Yeah, you know, I got to say it's the same over here on the East Coast. We've had low 70s, and nights have been cool, and it looks like summer has dwindled out, which is a welcome thing. I love fall in this city. It's great.
Yeah, today, or the time of this recording, it is the first day of autumn, so we hope that you've got plans for that. Of course, for those of you who celebrate the equinox in some bizarre way or another. Hey, enjoy yourselves tonight. Woohoo!
I take various pieces of my underwear and throw them in a circle around me in kind of a ritualistic fashion, and then I proceed to dance to some old emo music. It's really a beautiful thing. I invite anyone to come over and join me. It's really a lot of fun, although I doubt I'll have any takers.
Wow. Yeah. But you know what? If you shot some footage of that, it would be great on YouTube.
Absolutely. I think I'll give that a shot. Get out the old digital 8 cam and see if we can get some footage going.
You and Matthew McConaughey, bless your heart.
That's how we roll.
What are you waiting for?
This is the BTS Mix Show.
Great.
Now,
let's get started.
With Spencer Tracy and Doc Hancock.
All right, well, it's time to take a look at some of the forums that we've got in belowtopsecret.com on the BTS Mix. Doc, do you have a few that you'd like to point out?
Well, you know, I think it's prudent of us to address the 900-pound gorilla in the room. And I think that 900-pound gorilla has taken the form of a $900 billion bailout by the federal government to get our financial institutions out of the heap.
You know, what's amazing to me is now we have, and somebody made a great quote about this, profits have been privatized while bad debt and bailing out bad loans has become socialized. So now, you know, the people that, and I was looking at some of the salaries of these CEOs of these failed institutions, anywhere from $1.5 million to $35 million a year in salaries, which is ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Are there any small business owners, you know, let's say they've started a small business and you say they've run it into the ground or the business didn't go well or it just didn't work out for them. Did anybody come in and give them 2 years' salary just for failing a business? I don't think so. No. It's these morons and idiots at the top that drove these gigantic financial institutions into the ground, ran away with the profits, bought huge houses, big yachts, and now they're getting bonuses for leaving. It's absolutely unbelievable. And Matrix Baller 04 posts in, and I kind of wanted to use this post as an anchor to discuss this briefly. And the topic of the post is America Will Fall. And Matrix Baller 04 says, our government, ruled by the people for the people, is now run by a small group of individuals behind the scenes. We have lost so many rights and freedoms the Constitution guarantees us, yet no one says or does anything about it. Our country is a republic, and it seems like no one cares. If our founding fathers were here today, they would be applauded by the current government and the actions American citizens are taking against it. If the NWO does happen, it will be all of our fault because we never stood up to these corrupt individuals and brought democracy back into the hands of the people. Our government is as corrupt as they get, and it's only getting worse. I don't care what anyone says. The day will come when our reign as the wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world will come crashing down, the same as every other powerful empire throughout history. And he says, end rant there. And I think, you know, Matrix Baller brings up a really tremendous point. And touching on what you just said, Spencer, you know, we are now moving into a massive form of socialism through a Republican Party. And I don't want to get politics into this, but the Republicans, you know, will defy socialism at almost any cost. In fact, it's one of the great foundations of their party. And even Democrats, far left Democrats, stay away from socialism because it's been proven that it just doesn't work, and it certainly can't work in tandem with a free market capitalistic society such as the U.S. And what we're seeing now are just trillions of dollars being printed that we don't have, And in my opinion, the only thing that's going to come of this is that the dollar will go through massive deflation. It'll become worthless. The United States' credit rating will go down. And it's going to start this cyclical cycle, I guess, as if any cycle is not cyclical, that will ultimately start literally feeding itself from within. And it's just going to get worse and worse and worse as the dollar gets lower and more money is printed. And I think it's very telling that normally a very secretive form of the government, the Treasury and another secret private organization, the Fed, has been so blunt and blatant about this, about what a situation we're in and what they're going to do to fix it. It's just unbelievable the size of this thing and the implications that it has, you know, for America moving forward into the future here.
It's not fair to America, but yet we have this apathy towards what's going on in our economy. Well, it's not really affecting us yet. Oh, yeah? Well, when your balance sheet comes in for your 401k, let's see if it's affecting you. And down the road, we're going to be paying for this. Now, how are we going to pay $700 to $900 billion? How are we going to do that? And afford all these social programs and everything else that, you know, people are promising in the election? You can't. You just can't do it. There's got to be some sound fiscal responsibility in this country, and bailing out private institutions, and it's the Fed's fault. I mean, when we got, and it's our fault because we allowed it to happen, most people don't understand their rights. They don't get it, that there's a reason why our founding fathers did the things that they did. Corporations weren't legal back then, where you didn't have anyone that wouldn't be able to take responsibility when it all goes under. I mean, if you are a private business owner, And free enterprise was the way the system was built. You didn't have these corporations where, you know, the stockholders make all the rules, or you have these certain individuals at the top that are making tremendous amounts of money while the little guy gets squished. There wasn't any of that, because they understood that once these corporations took over, there would be no national loyalty to these corporations. For example, what started out as oil companies in America have now gone global and international, and they have no loyalty to the United States that they started in, the capitalistic system that gave them their jumping off point to now where they have this control. And it's unfortunate that so many of our politicians have sold their souls to these corporations, and they think this isn't going to come back and get them. They live for the moment, they take the money, and they just live in the greed, and they think this isn't going to come back and bite them in the ass. And it's all going to come back and bite us in the ass. It really is. And here's the sad part. Nobody cares. And I think that's listed in there's a few of us that care. Doc, you and I understand what's going on here. There's other people that are screaming their heads off going, what in the hell is going on here? This is a serious deal. But for the most part, Americans are happy watching their TV shows, watching Monday night or Sunday night football, and could care less. Do we get the government we deserve? That's for somebody else to call.
And it's interesting you bring that up. I talked to probably five or six of my coworkers today, and they're all good people. You know, I wouldn't put them down in any stretch of the imagination. But each and every single person that I talked to today about this mess has absolutely no idea what's happening. And I fear that Americans in general, and I'm very pro-American and I'm very patriotic, but what I see happening around me right now sickens me, because this is not patriotic what's happening right now. The plundering of Social Security, of Medicare to fund this, the fact that we are going to be so in debt to China and Russia and Japan that we're going to be up to our eyeballs. And the fact that nobody understands how money is made in this country, the fact that nobody understands, and I don't think they feel that they need to, because, you know, you have, what, 60 years of virtual unrestricted prosperity, and the American people have fallen into this abysmal complacency that does not allow them to freely think and go out and read and learn about this. Because each and every time, you know, oh, the SNL scandal, oh, you know, that we made it through that. It was a couple rough years. You know, there was a big recession in 73 and 74. There were lines at the gas pump and everything. And I keep hearing, you know, how can things be that bad? In the Great Depression, you know, people were miserable. They were living in Central Park in these shanties, and nobody could buy anything. And there were, you know, bread lines and all this stuff. Where is all that stuff if things are so bad? Well, I just want to look at people and pick them up by their shirt collars and say, the big difference now is that people didn't have credit cards during the Great Depression. People couldn't go out and get a $250,000 loan with poor credit and no ability to pay it back. And that's what we've been doing for the past 20 or 30 years. And just as you said, Spencer, it is now coming back to bite us. And my fear is that the majority of Americans are not understanding the severity of this. They're not understanding what sort of impact this is going to have on our everyday lives. Forget the financial markets. Forget the rich CEOs. I'm talking about, you know, let's take New York, for example. Let's assume for a moment that food were to stop coming into this city. Can you imagine how quickly 8.5 million people will devour whatever food supply is currently in the city? And then what happens next? People are going to go out and they're going to go hunt and kill for it. But there's no wildlife. There's no vegetation. So that you're going to see people breaking into people's apartments. And granted, this is a fairly, you know, pessimistic perspective of this, but it's not that unfounded. I mean, look at the nation's food reserves. They're almost completely tapped out because there's been no impetus to put anything in there because things have been so good for so long. Well, now we've reached this point where we're in dire straits. There's a good chance that the dollar will completely fail, and we need to start looking at these things on the horizon. And I can only stress to people, really start making some provisions for yourself. Start thinking about what happens in this situation or that situation, and what are you going to do to be prepared for it? I mean, look, everybody should have a few days' worth of food and water on hand to begin with. But what happens when all of those conveniences and luxuries that we're so accustomed to, being able to go buy food from a grocery store and being able to, you know, get things here and there at a whim. And granted, I mean, look, New York is a city of luxury. You can go get your dry cleaning done at 3 o'clock in the morning if you want to do it. You know, what happens when all that disappears and all that vanishes? That's what I guess scares me the most about all this. And the complacency that doesn't allow anybody to really look out for anything like this. That's what's gotten me nervous about this whole thing.
Well, don't worry, Doc. By the time all that happens, they'll figure out how to make Soylent green.
It's made out of people.
you know, we joke about that, but oh my gosh. And here's the other deal. We've been talking about this for years, and I've been talking about it to you for friends, going, what do you mean the Amero? What do you mean this North American Union? I said, here's what they have to do. They have to crash the economy. You have to open up our borders. You have to dissolve the Constitution, and you have to make it so bad that people will accept anything as long as their way of life will be allowed to continue. And you're seeing that right now. We are on the verge of almost a coup in this country, I think. And just keep watching. Okay, just keep watching. When they say, well, you know, if we went to this one world or this North American currency, boy, things would, we could build our financial, and then we're going to open up the borders, have some free trade. We're going to do, no, that doesn't work that way. And instead, it will just destroy this country. And anyway, we can rant on this forever. Please feel free to put your comments down, whether you agree or disagree. We'd love to hear from you, or you can U2U us. We'd be happy to respond to that, too. All right, we're going to jump to the next thread, which happens to be a rant. And, Doc, tell me a little bit about this one. I've read through it, and I can't tell if this person, Sexy Sadie, is serious or not. I'm done with most poor people and with Walmart forever.
Well, I thought that this topic kind of conveniently accessorized itself to the topic we were just discussing. And it says, I've always treated the poor with respect. I've opened doors for them. I've slowed my vehicle for them. I've moved my shopping cart out of the way for them, even as they've waddled past me and budged in front of me time and time again. But no more, not after today. Why can they never learn from my example? Why must they always confuse politeness with weakness? Why must they always be 10 thoughts behind me in nearly every matter? Now, don't go ape here. I'm not claiming to be some beaming intellectual, but there's a certain class of people I'm starting to lose my ability to communicate with, and they all seem to shop at Walmart and make less than $100,000 a year. I've always felt guilty shopping at Walmart, as I imagine they probably beat their workers, and because the quality of goods are so pathetic. Still, I've done it mostly out of necessity, as I too am poor. Even so, I refuse to believe I belong to the same pecking order as these primates, nor will I shop in this store ever again, period. After tonight, I'm convinced God must be playing trading places with me, and I need to find, metaphorically, the Eddie Murphy who's stolen my real life. And Sexy Sadie continues to go on and rant about this for a little while. First of all, Sexy Sadie, I hate to burst your bubble, but if you're making roughly about $100,000 a year, you're far above the poverty line. In my estimation, if you're working for minimum wage and you're trying to support a family and you're bringing in $250, $300 a week, trying to support a family, pay a mortgage, pay your rent, pay your utilities, pay all of your other bills, buy food and try and support some sort of existence for your family, that's poverty. Making $100,000 a year is certainly not poverty, and anyone, I think, in this country can live very comfortably on $100,000 a year, give or take, depending on where you live. New York, maybe not, but certainly most of the Midwest, with the cost of living, you can have a very nice house and live a very comfortable life. So I agree with you, Spencer. I'm not sure if this is serious or not, but again, I think we're looking at this skewed perspective on what's going on in this country. And our realities and our paradigms of what is right, what is wrong, what is this and what is that. And I think that it's pretty apparent with this post.
Well, yeah, and here's the deal. Who says, $100,000 makes you a better person or not? Let me tell you a little story, Doc. I'm involved in several different charities and raise money at the holidays for the poor and those who are less fortunate, maybe not of their own choice, but, circumstances may have kept them from making a decent living or education or circumstances, like I said. And what I have noticed, and in this part of the country, the economy is very good. Very, very good. We have the lowest unemployment rate in the nation here in West Texas because of the oil industry and the boom. If you want a job, even though it may be menial, you'll be able to work. There's no reason you can't work if you want to. Just come to West Texas. But what I have found is when I'm asking for money for the poor, or I'm asking for a donation to get some kids some school supplies, and I'm not tooting my own horn here, this is just an observation, I notice the people who give the most don't look like they could afford to give it. And the people who drive up with their handbags and their Mercedes or whatever won't give a dime to help someone. And I just shake my head, and because I see the people who haven't had anything understand what it's like to not have anything. So they're willing to give. They're willing to fork over, $20, $100, which is more than, the pocket change that some people just throw in the bucket, and help other people out because they understand what it's like. It's like my parents from the Great Depression. They lived through it as kids, and they understood what it was like to not have anything. That kind of made them pack rats, but they understood what it was like to not have anything. And it's maybe that's here's a big philosophical thing. Maybe it's God's judgment on this country to go, you know what? You've had it for so long, and you haven't shared it. You've been stingy, and you haven't taken care of what I need you to take care of. So here. But what I've noticed is the people who can't afford to give, give. Now, that's not to say that there aren't some lowlifes everywhere. I mean, okay, but let's say there's lowlifes in the boardroom, too. Okay, let's include everyone. Let's not put a dollar figure on it. Let's say there's just lowlifes everywhere. They could be the thug who can't wear, doesn't know how to wear his pants and breaks into people's houses, or it could be the CEO of Enron. It could be anybody. It doesn't really matter. It's a lack of respect. It's a lack of good stewardship for what you've been given to bless others. And it this country has just lost it. We've forgotten. We've become selfish, and we live in our little financial happy place. Am I ranting?
No, not at all.
Yeah. Okay. We live in our little financial happy place, but yet we've mortgaged ourselves to the hilt. And what happens when the borrower becomes the slave of the lender? Because that's going to happen. When you owe people money, you owe them money. You become their slave to pay that off. There's no just quick write-off to it. All right, I'll quit ranting, but I will say that slime balls no financial level. There are good people and there are bad people, but you can't put a dollar figure on. Well, they start about here. And as for Walmart, hey, they're providing some people with jobs. Good for them. If people couldn't get a job otherwise, or they're trying to, or elderly folks that wouldn't have a chance to be employable now have a job. And even if it's a greeter, who cares? They've still got a productive part of society. They're still producing something. So, God bless them.
I couldn't agree more. And I think Dead Flag Blues, who posted in on this thread, kind of hit it on the head, said, wow, I was going to come in and rant and rave myself after reading the post. But I'll just say this. Part of being human is recognizing another's humanity. If you're objectifying them as some obstacle to get through over or as some vehicle to attain something, you're not proving your superiority, but your lack of integrity. I wish I could remember the same every day. And that's, I think, really well put. And I think, Spencer, you know, what you were getting at and the bigger picture to all of this is that we as a society, and I'm talking about all Americans, really need to start figuring out how to come together on this one and put down all of this petty bickering over politics and lipstick and who went to a madrasa school and all of this crap that has absolutely nothing to do with bettering our way of life. And we've gone through this process now for so long, you know, we really need to start figuring out how to start taking care of one another and finding the real benefit and the real wealth in being generous to one another. And I'm not even talking financially, just helping out around, you know, helping your neighbors, being a part of the community and doing what you can, you know, because that's the only thing that's going to pull us through this. And if everybody's just running around with a sense of individualism and arrogance, then we're not going to get anything done here. And this is going to be a real long slog. So, you know, I guess we'll leave it at that. And on a lighter note, moving into the next topic, we are, here's, I guess, a bit of social justice, which is can be bizarre at times. It says, bankruptcy judge orders victim to pay back thief. And Spencer, you found this topic. Tell us a little bit about this.
Yeah, this one, you know, since we're talking about government and what seems to be injustices, I think, this story is from ABC News. It was posted by Dimensional Detective, who over the last few months I've been reading a lot of stuff and enjoy the post, by the way. Mark Povermo feels ripped off twice over. A judge ordered him to repay money he collected from a builder convicted of stealing from him and told him to kick in the thief's attorney fees and court costs, too. The contractor was found guilty of grand larceny for taking the client's money and doing no work, but then has everything turned around in bankruptcy court and actually ends up victimizing the client a second time with the help of the court system. What a joke. And how sad is that?
Well, it, you know, it sounds like one of those really unfortunate loopholes that, you know, lawyers make lots of money to find. And, you know, this is one of those unfortunate events. I'll never forget it. It was about 10 or 12 years ago. A man from Rhode Island killed a man. I'm sorry, a man in Massachusetts killed a man from Rhode Island in the state of Rhode Island. And when the case went to court, there was an old law on the books, because at one point, you know, during the very beginning and founding of our country, Rhode Island was actually kind of a place where Massachusettsians, I guess that's a proper way to call them, actually banished criminals to. So Rhode Island was this kind of place where they sent all the criminals, you know, to get them out of their hair. And there was this old law on the books that said, if a man from Massachusetts kills another man from Rhode Island, then that is okay, because that man from Rhode Island was a criminal and that's why he was sent there in the first place. This law from, you know, 1790 or something was pulled out in the court and it had never been overturned. Somehow, you know, it went through court cases and nobody ever found it. Nobody ever bothered with it. This lawyer found it and actually got the guy off for killing the man from Rhode Island. And it was unbelievable. I think this sounds like one of those same situations where there was some weird bankruptcy law or there was some entitlement law that was set forth in the courts and it had to be upheld. I don't think the judge was this big of an idiot. It's unfortunate that he had to uphold it. And I hope it set a precedence for, you know, any future cases that had anything similar to do with this. But, you know, it's these silly little loopholes, and I think there needs to be a law that if we find a silly little loophole, everybody agrees with a silly little loophole, you can't utilize it in the damn courtroom. I mean, come on now.
Yeah, I agree with you there. All right, well, I think we've done enough ranting for this segment. I would like to say that we're going to be hearing something from Dave Rabbit in just a second about the Bay Area UFO Expo that's coming up this weekend. As a matter of fact, let's get to that right now.
Hi, everybody. Dave Rabbit here from the ATS Mix Show. And I want to tell you, I've got something that's really fabulous coming your way, and we want each of you to be a part of this experience. Last year, my partner, Johnny Anonymous, and I attended the Bay Area UFO Expo in San Jose, California. This year, the founder of the event, Victoria Jack, invited Johnny and I back again. I can't believe it, neither could Johnny, but it's fact. We are going to be attending the 10th Annual Bay Area UFO Expo, this year located in the beautiful Marriott Hotel in Santa Clara, California. Now, it's going to be held this year on September 27th and 28th of 2008. There's going to be all kinds of vendors there. There's going to be all kinds of speakers there. There's going to be all kinds of special featured guests, which I cannot mention because it's top secret. But there's going to be all kinds of things about UFOs, alien encounters, earth mysteries, government cover-ups, and so much more that I just don't have the time to mention. But you can find out more information by going to abovetopsecret.com/forum. Go to the ATS Mix information area, and you'll find a thread that says Meet Dave and Johnny at the Bay Area UFO Expo. Now, for those of you that are members of the AboveTopSecret.com family, you have some really special opportunities. Number one, you can ask questions for the guests that are listed there on this particular thread. And number two, and probably more important, is that you will get a chance to win 10,000 ATS points for bringing us a can of Bush beans and being one of the first 10 that do it. So there's a couple of incentives right there. And actually, we're going to actually probably eat the Bush beans, or either that, or we'll autograph the Bush beans and give them back to you. And you can sell them on eBay. Now, won't that be fun for everybody? Okay, and then now I tell you something else that's really going to be amazing. Johnny and I are probably going to do all kinds of crazy stuff like we did last year. And it's kind of like we were Pac-Man Jones with the Dallas Cowboys. Last year, I thought Johnny and I were going to get absolutely banned for all the shenanigans that we did. I mean, we were going through the expo area with all the exhibitors, and we were singing Edelweiss, and we were getting a group together, and we were doing this and doing that, and we were singing songs, and I don't know how many renditions of Do You Know the Way to San Jose that Johnny and I sang last year, but it was absolutely chaotic fun to the 10th degree. And this year is going to be even better. And I can't wait to meet a lot of you guys and gals out there that are fans of the ATS Mix Show. And as we're approaching our 100th show, I mean, we want to thank each and every one of the 23 million subscribers and fans that we have accumulated in the last year. And if you like more information, as I say, you can go to abovetopsecret.com/forum. Go to the ATS Mix information and find the thread that says Meet Dave and Johnny. You can also go directly to the Bay Area UFO Expo site, which is located at www.thebayareaufoexpo.com. And this is also located on all the different pages. It shows the artwork with all the guests and whatever. So please come join Johnny Anonymous and yours truly, Dave Rabbit, for a weekend of fun on September the 27th and 28th of 2008 at the Marriott Hotel, Santa Clara, California, at the 10th Annual Bay Area UFO Expo. And for those of you that fly in, you fly in through the San Jose International Airport, and the hotel is about 5 minutes away from that location. So hope to see all of you there. Peace and love, everybody.
We asked you what you thought of the BTS mix.
Bad, immoral, and wrong.
I guess we must be doing something right. Now back to Spencer and Doc.
Piping hot and delicious.
And welcome back, one and all, to the BTS Mix Show. I'm Doc Hancock.
And I'm Spencer Tracy. And I guess we should cue the Twilight Zone music for these next few topics, Doc.
Yeah, you know, some pretty interesting stuff here, all dealing with the ethereal, in the ether, I guess you could say it. And you found this first one here, Spencer, and it's posted by the Angel of Light and says, "Ike, the monstrous cyclops that will harass Texas. What say you, sir?"
Well, I found this interesting. You know how some people post things and they go, "Wow, you know, I predict this," but it was like 10 minutes after it happened, and you can see the date stamp. Well, I always look at the date stamp just for fun. This one was posted actually a few days before it was certain exactly where Ike was going to hit. It was posted on the 9th, or 8th, actually. And it was posted by Angel of Light, where it says, you know, this is really, and I'll just kind of skip over this a little bit. In other words, just saying, get out of the area, that this is going to be something that's going to be devastating for the Galveston area. It is going to flood. It is going to wipe things off the map bad. And this is before we really knew the severity. And the Weather Service says, well, it may go down to a Category 2, maybe a 1 by the time it hits Texas. And goes on to say, you know, this hurricane will arrive like an incredible tsunami to the Texas coast. The floods will cover dozens of miles to the interior and many islands. And they'll practically disappear during it, which I thought was very prophetic, was rather interesting. So that was just one of the ones, because I like to hang out sometimes in the dreams and personal predictions forum just for giggles. I had a dream the other day. Oh, I guess it was a few months back, and I don't really talk about it because there's certain things that I know are kind of important and certain things that are not. For example, if something in my dream said 7.5 in Sacramento in October, okay, I would take that, you know, with a grain of salt. But it might be, you know, if it turns out that I say it like a month or two ahead of time and it's an exact number and it's in the area or that location is the epicenter, well, then, you know, that would be interesting. That would be a bit of an odd thing. So that's kind of what I keep an eye on in the in that dreams and personal predictions forum.
Well, you know, there's certainly something to be said, and I think we've all had one of those, you know, moments with a dream that we've had or a sense of deja vu or something where we're like, man, there's something to that. And some certainly more than others and some less than others. And some may say, well, it's never happened to me, so it must not exist. But I think it's a fascinating forum, and it's always fun to, you know, go through and look. Sure, there's a lot of crap, and you know, I think people are just making stuff up. But I think there are a lot of things to some of these posts, and this is certainly one of them.
Yeah, and sometimes the dream just may be your subconscious trying to work things out, because certain things have symbols. And these symbols mean something in your dream, whether that's, you know, your subconscious trying to tell you something, that there's danger, or that this is a person that you need to watch out for, or that you're coming to a point in your life where you feel like you're feeling mired down, or maybe that you're going to excel and you can see brand new possibilities in your life. And all those things can take the shape of different symbols in your dream. So, again, there may be a worldwide application for it, but most likely it is an application to your personal life and your subconscious. So let's jump over to another one, since we're going to cover about two more of these in the dreams and personal predictions forum. Meaning of the number 222 ? Boom. My wife had a vision last night. Without being really specific, the gist of it was she was sleeping and saw that she had died, and then she called them dark angels that were leading her somewhere. It wasn't her time yet. As she was leaving, they said, "Look at the clock when you wake up. The numbers will be very important, and do not forget." She woke up and the clock read 2:22 a.m. A lot more stuff happened after, but my question is, does 2:22 mean anything to anyone? Also, not related to this topic, but there was a loud boom somewhere over SD this morning, and with all the news reports, they're calling it unexplained. So I don't know. It may be synchronicity, it may be something else, but I don't really know. I'm not that far into numerology to tell you what 222 or 2:22 a.m. or 2:22 means in the dream, but it's got to mean something personal to you.
Yeah, and Elmo Jones writes in and says, "Me too. I had a dream like that. I was thinking about 5:45, and when I woke up and checked the watch, and holy crap, it was 5:45. Quite freaky." Who knows? You know, a lot of these things just run unexplained, and you try and look for meaning, and, you know, you hope that you get some closure to it and that some meaning presents itself. I mean, you know, 2:22, who knows? It could mean a lot of things. February 22nd, 2:22 in the morning, who knows?
Yeah.
So keep searching.
Yeah, and by the way, if you're into numerology and you can help Silver Wolverine with this in the Dreams and Personal Predictions Forum, the meaning of the number 2:22, boom, then give him a hand, would you? Now, one more, and I ran across this one also, Doc. It was from Apollo, and it is Judgment and Salvation. Almost a year ago, I had a dream that I was in an outdoor public place with lots of people, like a college campus. I overheard some people talking about the recent news that we had dropped a nuke on a country that morning. I remember being thrown for a loop as a mixture of emotions hit me. I simply couldn't believe that we'd use nukes again. I thought of all the people who had died and the insanity of it all. I was so disappointed and shocked, but I can never recall the name of the country. Then, suddenly, people began to go frantic. And I caught a glimpse of the clouds opening up and a nuke coming out of the sky. At that time, Russia wasn't in the news at all, but it seemed I seemed to know that it was from them. People began to run, and I even started running, but then I just stopped and thought, why? Where could I possibly go? Then the dream ended. Now, Apollo has a Christian background and goes through a few of the verses that he believes kind of tie in with the rapture. But that, again, that may be something, and I'm not discounting that dream or anything like that. I have dreams like that a lot, and it's usually because I've left the news on and I'm taking a nap, and it just kind of seeps into my dream state, and my subconscious begins to form things around that. You ever had that happen, Doc?
No, I did, and I think I've mentioned this before, but I'll say it again because it was just one of those things that still cracks me up. I think I was in high school, and I used to wake up to the radio, and ever since this happened, I haven't used the radio to wake up anymore. There was a radio contest going on, and the radio host was having two contestants dig through a pile of manure to find Barry Manilow tickets. And so,
wow.
In my subconscious, as I'm taking a little 10-minute interlude between the snooze button and my alarm, I'm having this dream that I'm there and I'm rooting through manure to get Barry Manilow tickets. And the whole time I'm thinking, I don't even like Barry Manilow. Why am I rooting through crap to get these tickets? And I wake up and it was just the very end of the contest. And they were talking about how, they just dug through crap to get these tickets. And one of the contestants found them and won. And, so it's interesting, just the brief power of suggestion, especially when your mind is kind of in that transient shape, what images your own mind forms and how you connect those dots, with images when you're in that sort of state. So I thought that was really interesting. And I agree, I had a similar dream to what Apollo was talking about here. And I realized that it was a couple of days earlier I had seen Terminator 3, with all the nukes falling out of the sky and all that stuff. So, it paints that very vivid image, and it's just even something that day that just reminds you of the calamity of that situation can certainly trigger, those sorts of dreams and those sorts of images. So I hope, Apollo, that you are incorrect and that never happens. If it does, help us all, I guess.
Oh, I have a question for you, Doc.
Sure.
So how would you tell the crap from the Barry Manilow tickets?
That's a very good question. I'm surprised they ever found him.
We'll be back with more of the BTS Mix Show right after this.
Are you ready for a close encounter of the third kind? Well, so are we. Hi, everyone. Dave Rabbit here with the ATS Mix Show from AboveTopSecret.com. My partner, Johnny Anonymous, is waist-deep in reviewing over 120 hours of videotape that the ATS investigation team took over a period of 10 days while they were all at James Gilliland Sanctuary at Trout Lake, Washington, overlooking the beautiful Mount Adams. In addition to Mark Allen, also known as Springer, Stephen Melzer, also known as Cracker, Johnny Anonymous, also known as Johnny Anonymous, we had a very special VIP AboveTopSecret.com member that accompanied the team by the name of Rod A. Williams. And in case you're one of the few people who live your life underneath a huge rock, Robbie Williams is the English singer-songwriter who has sold well over 100 million records and is in the United Kingdom Music Hall of Fame. Robbie and his crew join Mark, Stephen, and Johnny for a casual conversation about what each of them saw over a few days at the sanctuary. So if you want to hear the Robbie Williams UFO interview at Gilliland Ranch and see some of the amazing footage that was captured there by my partner, Johnny Anonymous, you can find this incredible conversation and video on the homepage of AboveTopSecret.com, the number one alternative to mainstream media for alternative topics.
Once again this fall, it will shine into millions of homes.
You're listening to the BTS Mix Show with Spencer Tracy and Doc Hancock.
Yeah, I know. I can't turn this off.
Hey, welcome back to the BTS Mix Show. I'm Spencer Tracy.
And I'm Doc Hancock. And I'll say that the front end of our show here has been pretty serious and a little intense at times. We appreciate you all for hanging in here with us. There's a lot of heavy topics going along in the world. And, we want to make sure that we give everything fair discussion. Coming back in from the break here, I found this little post, and I thought it was kind of funny. And this is in the jokes, puns, and pranks section. It says, you might be a NASCAR fan if, and this is kind of, you might be a redneck if, you might be a Yankee if, however the line finishes. And this comes in from Gimme Football 400. And he says, I found these jokes on racingportal.com, and I thought y'all might like them. You might be addicted to NASCAR if, and I'll just read off a few of them here. If you wake up in the morning to an alarm clock that says, gentlemen, start your engines with a motor sound behind it. If you refer to going to the bathroom as a pit stop. Men, while going to the bathroom, you swirl it in a left-hand circle. If you have a number painted on the side of your car or truck. If you put a yellow stripe on the back of your teenager's car. And this kind of goes on, and I thought a few of these were pretty funny.
I like them. You might be a NASCAR fan if you buy four new tires when you only have one flat. I got to tell you, I know somebody who is like the biggest NASCAR fan on the planet. And have you seen those, I guess they're parody t-shirts where you'll find, I mean, they'll have somebody, they'll have Jesus bowling or something. Just strange, bizarre, interesting t-shirts that I love, like the one with the hippo that says, I'm really not that hungry. Okay. I like the one that has the NASCAR logo, and instead of NASCAR, it says, boring. And got him one of those. Yeah, they got a kick out of it for a little while. I think they dust their coffee table with it now.
Right. Yeah. You know, I got to tell you, I've and admittedly, I've never been to a live NASCAR event. And from what I understand, it's a really good time and people get really into it. And there's just something about, you know, the smell of the fuel. And maybe that's what it is. Everybody's high from all the gas fumes, you know, but you're sitting there. And I talked to a guy once and I said, listen, man, be honest with me. You're a big NASCAR fan. Tell me why? And he said, I don't know, man. There's just something about it. You sit there. You know, you're in this small little 19 by 19 inch square seat. You're uncomfortable, but you know, there's just this excitement in the air, and you're there with like 100,000 people, and maybe you had a couple beers, and you're hanging out with your friends, and you're having a good time. And there's just something about the adrenaline of it, the speed of it, and watching these cars fly around. And you know, the logical side of me is going, man, you know, you're watching cars drive around for 3 hours, literally in a circle. And granted, they're moving fast, and there's, I guess, the possibility that one will crash, but I've just never gotten it. I'm not putting it down. I know it's a huge thing in America, and people are well into it, and racing all over the world is very, very popular. For some reason, just never floated my boat.
I have never been to a NASCAR race either. Here's the deal, though. I have people that tell me it is nothing like you see on TV because, of course, the party starts at 6 o'clock in the morning because it's 12 o'clock somewhere. Hand me a beer. It just is a crazy, like, a huge frat party. There are some bizarre things that go on pre-race and then, you know, of course, during the... By that time, everybody's kind of, a lot of people are sloshed at that point, and it's just like, hey, the noise keeps me awake. But it's totally different than you see on TV. I mean, because you don't get that feel of the crowd. You don't get that, you know, the pre-race kind of fun stuff that's all going on and the different things. You don't get to see what's going on in the parking lot with the different vendors and things like that. So it's probably a lot more fun than I'm making it out to be. And I would like someday to make it to the Texas Motor Speedway and watch a race out there. But until then, I'm just going to have to be stuck with watching it on HD.
And perhaps it's better that way. You can wake up on your own, Spencer, at 6 a.m., start drinking beers and, you know, be in a drunken slumber by the time it's noon and just have a great time in the comfort of your own home. You know, you don't have to worry about finding a bathroom or getting hit by a stray car or, you know, being beaten to bloody pulp by some drunken redneck. You know, that's a good thing, and I urge you to do so.
But it's also a good nap. It's kind of like watching golf. You'll wake up during the crashes or, you know, there's a great putt, but then you go right back to sleep. So I kind of equate NASCAR on TV with golfing, only slightly quieter.
Yeah, you know, that's what my grandfather used to do. He used to flip on the golf game, and I don't think he was a big fan of watching golf. It just gave him 2.5 to 3.5 unfettered hours of nap time where, you know, grandma would leave him alone. You know, she knew that he was going to watch that golf game and there was a good chance that he was going to fall asleep within the first 10 minutes of it. And he got a good nap out of it. So, you know, hey, you can't blame the guy for that.
By the way, if you'd like to read some more, there's a whole bunch of these posted. So check them out for sure. All right. Time to jump over to the general chit chat forum. Welcome to ADs, which stands for Access Denied's Cabin. Now, I'm hoping this is really Access Denied's Cabin and not something they pulled out of Southern Living or Mountain Living. He writes, welcome one and all to my humble abode in the Great White North. Good day and welcome to the Great White North. And I've even decorated it for the holidays. The only rules are chop wood, help cook, and BYOB. Have a great time. The lawn chairs are out in the back and enjoy the sound of the crickets, the sights of the stars, and, of course, the northern lights. So this is kind of one of those, it's kind of like our bar that we visited earlier and a couple of shows ago, Doc.
Yeah, you know, and this is kind of one of those great things on BTS where everybody gets to use their imagination a little bit. And I got to say, Access Denied, if this cabin is yours and if you're inviting me over, when can I show up? I can cook, chop firewood, clean. I'll be the pool boy if you have a pool. I'll tend the river if there's a stream nearby. I don't care. This cabin is absolutely gorgeous, and I love being out in the wilderness. You know, even though I, by the exterior of my personage, you'd think I'm a city boy, but I actually spent a lot of time growing up in the Rocky Mountains out in Colorado, and I have a great appreciation for being out in the middle of nature. So this cabin looks awesome. Looks like you get some great views out of there. And if not, hey, you know, it's always fun to imagine.
Rush, who we had on the show last week, writes, "Woohoo! Rush is here!" And then there's a picture of a Winnebago. So, I mean, you can pretty much just add whatever you'd like. Bring along a guitar, just like Lombozo does. Just everybody, it's a big party at Access Denied's cabin. You might want to check that out and add your creativity to this post. It's in the general chit chat forum. Welcome to AD's cabin.
And back to, I guess, a slightly more somber note, although kind of an interesting note. In the Breaking General News Forum, the headline reads, "Texas man kills home intruder with his own gun." And I think there, his own gun refers to the intruder's own gun. And this is out of Blue Mound, Texas. Where is that, Texas expert?
I don't know. I've been to Flower Mound, but I've never been to Blue Mound. It's probably close.
Yeah, more than likely. Texas, when two gunmen smashed through the glass front door of her suburban Fort Worth home.
Oh, well, there you go.
Kelly Hain. Oh, so it's near Fort Worth. Kelly Hain didn't think twice. The 34-year-old mother of two grabbed a shotgun that had been pointed at her face early Wednesday, starting a struggle that ended with one intruder killed with his own weapon and another in the hospital. "I wasn't going to let them get to my baby," she said, recalling the moment when she pushed up the muzzle of the shotgun, pointing it away from her children's rooms. Although the intruders told her to keep quiet, she screamed for her husband. She told her 12-year-old son, who was awakened by the sound of the shattering glass front door, to get his 5-year-old sister and hide. "It was like a horror movie," her husband, 32-year-old Keith Hain, told the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. "I thought I was a dead man. We were fighting for our lives." This story is unbelievable. You know, it's one of those stories where you cannot even imagine the fear and the terror that these people were feeling. You know, I mean, I think people's greatest fear generally is to wake up in the middle of the night and to get the sense that someone has broken in or someone has intruded into your home. And the fact that this woman was able to dig deep down, gather this courage, turn the man's own shotgun around on him, fire it, kill him, and hurt his accomplice or whoever was, you know, burglarizing the home. This story is absolutely unbelievable, and kudos to the mother for protecting her family and her children, and kudos to this whole family for having to, you know, live through this and experience that. That's got to be just horrible. I can't even imagine.
And home invasions are on the rise, and if things go bad, they'll be even worse, and people have a right to defend themselves. Finn 1916 posted, "Of course, the two men's families are going to sue because the woman should have just allowed them to do what they wanted. All of that because of the bleeding heart liberals. And that is sad coming from me because I am a liberal." Well, Finn, don't worry, because Texas has a law called the Castle Doctrine, which in some states, which just defies logic to me. You have to flee your own home and let the criminal have sway before you pull a gun and shoot this idiot. Well, in Texas, we have a little bit more of an understanding of how criminals should be dealt with. And if they break into your home, it's an instant death penalty. And there's no legal basis to where they can try to sue. And there may be some stupid lawyer out there that may feel like they want to get a little bit of cash or get some notoriety for trying to sue this poor family from a home invasion. But I would say there's no jury in Texas or pretty much anywhere in these United States that would convict this family for defending themselves. Let's hope not, anyway.
Well, yeah, and as a bleeding heart liberal myself, which I guess I would categorize myself as, this is absolutely intolerable. And yeah, this woman had every right to shoot these idiots with their gun or with her own gun. You know, I mean, come on, her family was being threatened. These people were armed. They were trying to take her stuff and threaten her family. Come on. I wouldn't hope that there's a jury in the world that wouldn't understand the severity of this case or any case similar to it and throw it right out. So we hope that there's no retaliation from any of these idiots' families of these guys who, you know, decided that they were just going to have a fun night and terrorize a whole family. For shame, people who broke into that house.
And that's the other thing. You know, we've actually covered this topic a few and had some great speakers and guests on the show talking about this topic that you can go back and review on some of our shows. By the way, that reminds me, Doc, we need to remind everybody that they can download our shows off iTunes. So if you would like to subscribe on the page where you downloaded this on Below Top Secret or AboveTopSecret.com, you can click the subscribe button. And if you have an iPod or some other type of thing that functions with iTunes, you can automatically download the BTS Mix Show in iTunes.
Yes, and to add to your, I guess we'll tack this on to the reminder list, we have a big debate coming up next week between Rush, and we've got Q-Ball involved with it, and it sounds like Dave Rabbit's getting involved with it to throw down, and he's finding a partner, and we've got a pretty heated situation happening. And if you go back to our last show, the BTS Mix 27, and go to that thread, you can actually read all the conversations that have arisen out of this. I think we're already on page 5 of the thread, and it's really starting to heat up, and it's really starting to get excited. I can't wait to see what the topic's going to be, and that's all going to happen on next week's show, so make sure you tune in for that. I think it's going to be really interesting.
Well, we're just about out of time, so I'm going to go ahead and direct this, Doc, to head straight for points, and we're talking, of course, of the BTS Mix Screen Test.
Oh, Spencer, I thought you'd never say it. I'm so excited because I think I've got a really good one this week. This one's pretty ambiguous. I gotta give myself some kudos for last week's screen test. It took people a good long while to get it, and I was pretty pleased with that. The last week's one was Nicolas Cage, and who won that? There was so much confusion. Was it? It was Access Denied, so she can add some of those points to her cabin. And congratulations on that. So hopefully.
Oh no, I've got a question. Is Access Denied a guy or a girl?
I think it's a girl.
Okay.
I think that
would make sense.
I hope so. If you're not Access Denied, I'm very, very sorry.
If you were a guy and it was Access Denied, it'd be Exit Only. So we'll just skip that altogether and get back to the screen test.
And this week's screen test, let's call this one 6,000 points. How does that sound, Spencer?
Hey, works for me.
Awesome. All right. So this week's screen test is as follows. It is autumn here in New York, and you could say that this actor is a gigolo at heart and will make any woman feel their inner zen. Brave, valiant, and a humanitarian, this actor has it all. Who is this person? And again, this is worth 6,000 points for the correct answer.
Okay, I think I have an idea who it is, Doc. So I will keep that to myself. I think we got a few people that may know what that one is. All right, well, that does it for another edition of the BTS Mix Screen Test. We hope that you have a great week. Join us again next week with more of your topics. And don't forget to post Deny Boredom. And, of course, you might make it on the BTS Mix Show.
Yeah, man. I mean, you're like our inspiration, man. So keep up with the posts. And, again, I can't stress it enough. If you want to come on the show, you know, talk to us, talk to Spencer and myself. We'd love to have you on here, and we'll definitely have a good time. So keep us tuned. We'll keep you tuned, and we'll have a good time.
For the BTS Mix Show, I'm Spencer Tracy.
And I'm Doc Hancock. Please take care of one another.
You've been listening to the BTS Mix. If you have a comment, suggestion, an opposing view, or would like to participate in a future show of BTS Mix, please visit the website belowtopsecret.com. The views expressed on BTS Mix do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of the Above Network LLC or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening, and continue to deny boredom by logging on to belowtopsecret.com.